Welcome to A Longer Table Podcast, a space where curiosity and proximity will challenge everything you thought you knew. I'm your host, Amanda Carpenter, inviting you to pull up a seat. You just might leave thinking, maybe we're not so different. Do you want to take intentional living one step further? Consider what you buy and where you buy from. My favorite place to shop is Able. Able's clothing and accessories are a true investment for my wardrobe. The pieces are high quality and beautiful, and every purchase made is an investment in other women around the world who are making them. Able takes their responsibility to their customers, the planet, and their social impact very seriously. So if you and I are anything alike and you want cute, lasting wardrobe staples while also supporting a much greater mission, give Able a visit at ableclothing.com. Join myself and Able in moving fashion forward. Use code ALONGERTABLE15 for 15% off when you shop. I am super pumped. I feel like I say that every episode because I love all of my guests, but I'm really extra excited because today's guest is a real life friend. Christine is joining us at the table. Christine and I met, if you've been following me or read my newsletters or follow on social media, you probably recall that Christine, how did it exactly happen? I had a mutual friend who reached out saying, hey, if there's anyone in LA who is willing to do like a house swap or has their home available around the holidays, let me know because I have a friend who's searching for a place. I don't know. It was like kind of random, right?
Very, very random. I just posted and within 15 minutes, I think we got connected.
That's so cool. Yeah. So essentially we have a mutual friend in Chicago who'd seen your post, sent it to me saying, hey, I know you guys go back to Indiana for the holidays a lot. You know, is your home in LA available for this family? And my initial gut is like, even as someone who's an advocate for building longer tables, I don't want to share my home with just anyone, especially someone I don't know. Right. So I, of course, clicked on the post that she sent me, which was your story, and then did a little creepy. And I'm like, oh, she seems lovely. Like they have kids. They seem normal. What does normal even mean these days? I don't know. But you passed the Instagram little just gloss over, and I started chatting with you, and the rest is history. And you stayed in our home, and then we met, and we got to go to Disney together, which was so generous of you and your family for sharing that experience with us. But that's all the backstory of how Christine and I got connected. And I asked her to join us today. We're going to talk about her cancer diagnosis. And Christine, thanks for being willing to be here and to share. There's so much I want to ask, but let's start with the story of when you got diagnosed. And let's start there.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me and having us in your home. We will always remember Christmas of 2022 spent in your gorgeous home in LA. So thank you. Let's start at the beginning, which was June of 2019. And actually, that's not even the beginning. The beginning would have been New Year's Eve, 6 months prior to that, which is when I found a lump in my right breast accidentally. We were out in Wisconsin Dells with our two little kids at the time and just happened to place my hand on my chest in such a way where I noticed something was different. And it took a couple appointments. I did thermography first, which if you're not familiar, is sort of an adjuvant therapy to like mammograms and ultrasound, but it's non-invasive. And I thought, well, I'll just go that route first. Surely it can't be anything serious. And did that for the first 3 months. And it seemed like things were changing, that it was growing, it was bothering me. And so I went ahead with an ultrasound that looked abnormal. And then in June of 2019, finally did a biopsy that revealed that I had invasive ductal carcinoma, which is the most common form of breast cancer. And what they could tell at the time was that it was probably stage one. It was relatively small. And so we went ahead with more diagnostic, a diagnostic mammogram, and made plans to move forward with surgery and treatment. But about 5 days after receiving the official diagnosis, I was late for my period and took a pregnancy test the morning of going to meet with the surgeon, and it was positive. So found out within the same week that I was pregnant with our third child. So that changed everything. I mean, the cancer diagnosis seemingly changed everything, but the pregnancy was unexpected in light of that. And so it changed, you know, how I proceeded forward, how I made decisions. It was the filter through which I took my next steps. And that's the beginning of the story. Yeah. There's a lot more since then. But
when you first heard the words like cancer, and you were what, how old, if you don't mind me asking?
I was 32. I will say that the surgeon prepped me. So upon leaving the biopsy, she had said, based on what she saw, it was a 50 to 80% chance that it was cancer. So even before I knew for sure, I was shocked. I remember walking out into the waiting room where my husband was waiting for me and like not quite sure. I couldn't quite find the words to communicate what I had just been told. But I think, and maybe as a fellow Enneagram 8, you might resonate with this. There's like just a gut feeling sometimes about stuff. And as soon as she said it, I was like, I know that this is happening. I didn't know why. I didn't understand it. But yeah, it's simultaneously devastating and also just confusing as someone who prioritized my health and certainly from the outside looking in, led a very healthy lifestyle, had no family history, wasn't quite sure how this happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine that would be disorienting to say the least.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, you find out you guys are expecting your third.
Yes.
And so how did that change the course of action? I mean, were you, had you not been pregnant, was there a certain route you were going to go? And then because of the pregnancy, you totally said, all right, change all the plans? Or what did the doctors say? Did anyone encourage you to like not go through with the pregnancy? Was that even, I mean, not that it maybe was a consideration for you personally, but from the medical standpoint, were they like, this is not a good idea?
Yeah. So all of the above. I will say I felt like I didn't have a ton of time to think about it without the knowledge of the baby. You know, I, in the back of my mind, I was late for my period. You know, there was sort of this like, is this going to be a part of the story too? So I don't know if I could say for sure if I would have changed how I moved forward. But I will say that getting a second and third opinion after the initial conversation with that surgeon, I did have one oncologist in particular who was adamant that I needed to get an abortion. I mean, just very, very adamant. After I had communicated that wasn't an interest of ours. I mean, my husband was sitting right next to me 4, 5, 6 times in this like very short consultation. She was really pushing for me to do that. So that was definitely a part of the conversation, not part of my own consideration. And I know this is such a very personal decision, especially when things happen simultaneously like that. But for us, we wanted our baby. We had been trying for a while and just so happened that the timing worked out the way that it did. Yeah, so I will say that I feel one of the things that I've gotten good at over the last 4 years is advocating for myself in these medical settings. And I think I would have done that the same way, whether or not, I was pregnant, but ultimately I decided not to move forward with chemotherapy right away. That felt very uncomfortable to me. And so I did have surgery at about 8 or 9 weeks pregnant. I did have a unilateral mastectomy that felt like it made sense to me at the time, like cut it off, cut it out, like let's do that. And I was pursuing counsel with a naturopathic oncologist and I was, you know, working with people to help me with the holistic side of things, but I had chosen to really just not do chemotherapy. But 5 months after all of that, after I did have surgery, I did have a recurrent tumor that was found in my mastectomy scar. So I was just having a normal follow-up and something which I thought was scar tissue was there. And we found that it was another tumor. And so at that point, I felt backed into a corner to make the decision that I didn't want to make. But at that time, I knew that the baby was bigger and was more likely to handle the medicine better. And it was clearly an aggressive form of cancer that I wanted to address because I still had, at that point, 8 weeks left in my pregnancy.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're like 32 weeks pregnant. Now you have to start chemo. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, pregnancy is already so hard for so many reasons that I won't even go into. I feel like I'm tired of talking about it after my own just being like sick from, you know, constant nausea, whatever, but just on so many fronts, like pregnancy is so hard on our bodies so much. Mm-hmm. And so your body's working so hard to grow this human. And now, you know, and your body's trying to fight this cancer and now you have to undergo chemo. What was that like? What's for people who don't have, I have several family members who currently and in the past have gone through chemotherapy. So I've had probably more exposure maybe than others, but for someone listening who hasn't had exposure, I mean, we see it on TV, but yeah. Like, tell me, give me the nitty gritty. What's that experience actually like?
So my personal experience, I mean, I was terrified. It was something that I really did not want to do. But my personal experience was honestly relatively positive. I handled it very well physically. And I think, you know, this is my own theory, but I think being pregnant actually potentially helped me in that way. I mean, you have so much more blood when you're pregnant. And I have no idea if there's any scientific basis to this, but I felt like perhaps it diluted the intensity of the drugs. Cause I got the most harsh drugs at the very beginning. I mean, what's called the Red Devil, or Adriamycin, Cytoxin. I got that first. And so I was really expecting nausea and, you know, and fatigue and all of the things that you sort of see on TV or they prepare you for. And I didn't really have any of that outside of normal pregnancy feelings, you know, at that point in pregnancy. Right. So, for that, I was really, really grateful. I felt like I managed it quite well, but I will say it took a lot of the joy out of that last part of my pregnancy. You know, having to go to the hospital every 2 weeks, and just the stress and the anxiety that was sort of stirred up, not knowing when I would go into labor. And, you know, once I started chemotherapy, I was considered high risk and had to work with an MFM. And that was something, you know, I was planning to do a home birth. So it was a huge switch. So there was a lot of feelings and grief related to the changes that took place in my birth plan and just the unknowns moving forward. I'm really grateful to say that I did go into labor on my own and I was able to have the delivery that I wanted that was co-managed with a midwife at the hospital. But it was still, you know, looking at pictures, I have no hair, you know, I have one breast, I'm, you know, holding my newborn and, you know, our bodies are amazing and very resilient, even in the midst of, I would say, like the hardest thing my body's ever done at the same time, still being able to do what it did was really remarkable. And I have a lot of gratitude for my body for all the things that it's been through, but certainly that particular day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so you've already shared that obviously the baby, she's here, she made it, you know, and now we're talking about this as, you know, it's in the past now. How old is she? Two?
She's three.
She's three. Okay. So 3 years ago. So she made it. Was there ever concern too that getting the chemotherapy, even though you were that far along in the pregnancy, that it could actually cause long-term damage or actually like potentially, was there concern around the baby's life, like during that for you? Like, I just feel like that would be.
Oh my goodness. I mean, the whole time.
So scary.
Yeah, doing the surgery at 8 weeks pregnant, I mean, there was no guarantees and they told me that, right? Like this could, going under anesthesia could certainly impact your ability to carry this baby to term. So I got an ultrasound the day after my mastectomy to make sure that the baby was okay. And I was grateful my surgeon agreed to that. I just remember the 20-week ultrasound being a really big deal for me. I had not really had that fear and anxiety with my other pregnancies. And so it was a big deal to see that, you know, we didn't know it was a she at the time, but she was doing well and that everything looked normal. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, certainly after chemotherapy, you know, the first round of chemotherapy that I did while pregnant is cardiotoxic. And so 3 days after giving birth, I went to go get chemotherapy, and my husband took our 3-day-old to the children's hospital to get checked out by a pediatric cardiologist. And she had a follow-up maybe 6 months later, and everything's looked normal. But yes, there were definitely concerns, from the medical community, but also just as a mom, being fearful of what that could mean.
Yeah. It's just crazy. Like, I'm just taking a moment to think, okay, 30 something weeks pregnant, undergoing chemo. That already sounds so hard. And then at the same time, you have two other little kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And 6 weeks after she was born, the pandemic happened. And that ended up impacting the continuation of my treatment. We ended up cutting it short and triple dosing at the very end. I mean, things got really jumbled and just lonely. One of the things I think you look forward to after you have a baby is sharing the joy of that baby with other people. And we couldn't really be around anyone for a really long time. So there's a lot that's tangled up, in my postpartum period with my cancer journey. I mean, they're completely inextricably connected, and that's difficult to sort of parse things out in my brain a lot of the time.
Yeah. We'll get back to the conversation after this quick advertisement. By now, you might be growing tired of hearing me talk about RO, but if you haven't heard episode 131 with the founders, Joey and Heath, please go listen to that episode next. It's about breaking free from phone addiction. And even if you're thinking, Manda, I'm not addicted to my phone, I would strongly encourage you to check out RO. It has been such a gift to our family. To put it simply, RO is one part app, one part beautiful box. You put your phone in the box and the RO app tracks the time that it's inside. The box, which by the way is super aesthetically pleasing, sits on our bar cart, which we walk past 100 times a day. This serves as a reminder, a visual cue to put our phones away, like an invitation to be intentional. One of my personal favorite things about it is logging how my time away from my phone was spent. I label those hours with whatever I've done. Sometimes it's baking cookies or playing dinosaurs with Shia, family time at the park, intentional conversation with E. And this is just so motivating. It's what keeps me coming back. It's what keeps me wanting more time detached, unplugged from my phone. RO is an invitation to do more of the things that we all say matter to us. I'm telling you, it will change your life. Check it out at goro.com. Use code Manda to get 1 month free when you purchase an annual or 2-year membership. I cannot wait to hear what you think. Now, back to the show. Curious to know where things are at today. So obviously you've continued treatment. You've got these three beautiful, healthy kids. So on one side, it's like, life is great, but this has been now 4 years of you getting treatment, constant doctor appointments. You and I were just talking before we hit record about how like your hair is growing in thicker because your chemo's finally done. And where are things at today?
Yeah. So there was actually a 2-year period where my scans were clear. And to be clear, the scans that I was getting was focused on my left remaining breast, and it was whole breast ultrasound and breast MRI, which is what I requested instead of mammograms. And so they weren't doing full body scans, but the imaging we had available to us was showing clear scans, and I was feeling good, and my hair was growing back, and I was sort of coming out of cancer patient mode into cancer survivor mode. And last summer, so last June, I ended up in the ER and I was having chest pain. And long story short, after some more testing, it became clear that the cancer had actually spread. So in September of 2022, I received a stage 4 metastatic disease diagnosis. So from the very beginning, which was likely stage 1. I mean, based on everything, the pathology we had then to now less than a year or about a year coming up on a stage 4 diagnosis. So that's a whole different world. And I'm still feel very new in it. But the cancer has spread to my liver and to my bones and to my lung. And so it's a different story now, or it's a different chapter of the story, if you will. And so last fall, I pursued sort of a different route, not the traditional chemotherapy route, which wasn't offered to me anyway. Really, the only thing available to me was a medicine, an oral medication that would help sort of slow or stop the progress of the disease. But I believe that our bodies are intelligently made and that they can heal when given the right things. And so it just felt like really aligned to find a care team that would believe the same thing. So that led me to California, to the Cancer Center for Healing in Irvine, and wasn't sure how we were going to make it work, but felt really strongly that I should go for a consultation there, see what was up, if it was a right fit, and ultimately decided to go there. And so what it ended up looking like starting in November, beginning of November, was weekly trips out to California.
From Chicago.
From Chicago for low-dose chemotherapy or insulin potentiation therapy, in addition to many other supportive IVs and medications, repurposed drugs, et cetera. But that was the beginning of that. And I did that until our family came in December for about 6 weeks. My husband took FMLA and my kids, we pulled out of school, even though they were still doing schoolwork virtually, to be there together for 6 weeks because it was hard to be away for so much of the time and hard for my husband to single parent and all of the things. And then they came back after 6 weeks and every trip back to California after that just got harder and harder emotionally for me to be away from my family. And ultimately at the end of March, just decided I've had enough. this isn't working. It's not sustainable. It's very expensive, but also just really hard on my body and hard on my soul. And so I made the decision to find a different care team here. So it's been about 6 weeks or so of being on a new treatment plan and being with a new care team here in the Chicagoland area. So 40 minutes versus 4.5 hour plane ride. Mm-hmm. And it's been hard in many ways. It's been hard to change and trust a new plan. It's been hard to leave what was familiar. And I think there is a lot about removing myself from home and going to a new location to focus exclusively on my healing that was really safe and comfortable. And to have to really integrate that being back at home, figuring out like, well, how do I spend my days and, you know, how do I fit it all in into one day? And I will say, I feel like I've got my feet under me now and I feel really grateful and confident in my care team. But the reality of all of this is a stage 4 diagnosis. There's no map. Every body's different. Everybody's cancer behaves differently. And so there's a lot about how we're proceeding that's just trying and seeing how it goes. So I'm relatively newly on 2 medications and 2 additional holistic therapies that I'm doing. And we'll just have to see. July will be our next scans and we'll get a chance to see how my body is responding.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, where do I begin responding to that? You know, what do you say when someone's going through what you are and what you've been through and what you are currently going through? And it's like a lot. So on that note, one thing that I love about you when we met in person, and I even said it to my husband, I was like, Christina's so cool and she's so fun and she's just full of life. And I don't know, life has given you in these last 4 years, like every reason to be bitter and angry and depressed and hopeless. Mm-hmm. And yet I don't experience you that way. I'm not saying that you don't have your moments. Maybe you do. Fill me in. But I am curious, like what gives you hope and keeps you optimistic about the future?
It's a great question. I do have my moments for sure. Back to the Enneagram 8 thing. I feel like anger is like just below the surface all of the time. And usually it's a mask for sadness or, you know, fear, which there's a lot of that too. But yeah, I will say that, I mean, having my girls and having an incredible husband who we've been together, it'll be 18 years this year. I mean, just half of my life. And in many ways, it's helped me to focus on those things, those relationships, which really are my legacy. You know, those are the things that, you know, if and when my life is cut shorter than I'd hoped, you know, that's where I want to be investing. And so, you know, and as a mom, those responsibilities don't ever go away. You know, even when I could get on a plane and go to California and focus on, you know, my appointments and focus on healing, I was always thinking about them and I was always worried about them. And so, yeah, there's a lot of, certainly I have choice. And I think I've seen other people who are in my same shoes or similar shoes, that maybe give way to fear, give way to hopelessness. So I think there's a lot of choice. And I think there's a lot that, you know, you don't get to choose when you find yourself in this position. And, you know, certainly I wouldn't have chosen to have this diagnosis in the first place. I certainly wouldn't have chosen to have a stage 4 diagnosis. And so it's finding the things to be grateful for. I call them bright spots, you know, the little things, in any given day that, can connect me back to joy, can connect me back to, hope. And mm-hmm. So I think that there's a lot about what goes on internally in my mind, that kind of keeps me in that place or allows me to kind of, you know, go off into the gutter a little bit sometimes, but I have the tools, you know, to bring me back. I've been in therapy. I've happened to have been with the same therapist since like days after I found my lump in 2019. So I'm so grateful for the longevity of that relationship and the continuity that I've had with her over the years. That's been extremely helpful too. And I don't think I've said this, but you know, my faith and my, perspective, you know, knowing that, believing that there's eternity. And, I think that that does also help put things into perspective. Even though that's really hard to wrap my mind around a lot of times.
Yeah. I'm curious how your kids, especially like your oldest, for example, who's been really aware, to my knowledge, of everything happening really since the beginning. And I think your girls were a part of shaving your head before you started chemo and knew you were going to lose your hair. I'd love to hear just a little bit about what it's been like as a mom to have to, like, it's like we want to protect our kids from this stuff. We don't want them to have to see mommy sick in any capacity,
right?
Let alone going through a stage 4 diagnosis of cancer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I actually, chose not to shave my head this time. A lot of times with low dose chemotherapy, you're getting, you know, 10, 15, 20% of the full dose. So not everyone loses their hair. I did lose a lot of my hair and I really many times wanted to just shave it off and start fresh. But my middle daughter, I asked them what, you know, I was like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And my middle daughter, who's 7 now, was like, oh no, I don't want you to do that. And so my decision to not shave my head this time was really because of her preference and because of her, you know, her feelings. At the same time, yeah, you're right. My oldest daughter was just about to start kindergarten when all of this happened. And so in many ways, I think she doesn't remember a ton of life before mommy had cancer. And we have been pretty forthright with them, you know, sparing details and being really mindful to come to them with information, not emotionally. You know, we're not weeping and sharing news and that sort of thing, but being really honest and clear. You know, I know other families who choose not to use the word cancer or not even to tell their kids that they have it. And I think that's a very personal decision. And you won't ever know what decision you'll make until you're in it. But for me, I struggle to lie. I struggle to
spoken like a true eight.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, nope, we're just gonna tell them and we're gonna be really clear about it. So I will say the stage four season has been a little more challenging. You know, what I've said to them is, you know, mommy's going to this appointment or mommy's getting on this flight so that I can be around for a long time with you. And so I'm pretty honest with them about, you know, the reason that I'm investing all this time and money and energy into these things is because I want to be around. I want to be a grandma one day, and being really clear with them about that. So not saying, you know, I'm trying not to die, but I think they understand. And the more that we watch things like, you know, we watch reality TV, like baking shows or singing contests or that sort of thing. And, you know, there's always the package where they're talking about someone lost their mom or their sister or someone to cancer. And so we have conversations, you know, in real time about that too. And it was really cool. Shortly after we got back from California as a family, I got to chaperone a field trip for my middle daughter. And we went to the Shedd Aquarium, and one of her classmates was like, "Oh, why were you in California?" You know, and I said, "Oh, I was seeing doctors and going to appointments." And she said, "Oh, yeah, you have breast cancer," and it became very clear that, you know, Emmy had shared that with her and had done so, you know, I don't know. I think it's not without emotion. You know, it's not without emotionally connecting to it, but I think it's just, it is what it is. It's matter of fact, and not being ashamed, not being, you know, afraid to say the word or afraid to say it, and also not being embarrassed, you know, to be honest with people in their lives about it. So I hope and pray that has, you know, that served them. Unfortunately, like you said, many people in your life currently and in the past have gone through this experience, and I don't think those numbers are going down anytime soon. And so, you know, I do hope and pray that the way that we've handled it and their proximity to it and their, you know, their closeness to it, their experience of it has diminished some of the fear that might typically happen for kids in this sort of situation.
Yeah. What would you say you've learned, or in other words, because I'm sure there's so much that you've learned, but another way of posing this question is, how are you different? Like, do you view this chapter of your life as, is there like a Christine before the cancer diagnosis and then Christine after, or not so much? How has this changed your life for better or worse in both ways?
Yeah. So I think it's both and I'm really trying to kind of sit in the tension of my reality all the time. I tend toward black and white thinking. I like for things to be categorized and clear. And unfortunately, that's not life, right? But I think there was a naivete, you know, that I had before, where I thought I could either manipulate or control things to be that way, or things were that way, and they just aren't. But I also have said, you know, I'm still Christine, right? Like I'm still the same person, and nothing has been untouched in my life. You know, I mean, things as simple as like I think I always really struggled with like small talk or like keeping things on the surface. Like I always really wanted to kind of just go there with people in conversation. But I think now my tolerance for that sort of thing is really low. Like I avoid certain social situations because I just don't think I can do it.
Yeah.
And I think also people aren't prepared for, you know, my answer to the question, like, how are you, or what's new in your life? Right. And so I think that there's just some discernment that I've needed to use. in situations or places that I put myself in, or relationships that I invest in, you know, further, because for the most part, I really need someone who's willing to kind of sit in the discomfort of my life with me. And also someone who's willing to sort of reciprocate that level of vulnerability and depth. So I think we could probably talk for a really long time about all the things that have changed, or the ways that I've changed. But I think fundamentally, you know, it's good for me to remember that, like, I'm still me, and yet I have learned so much. I'm learning so much, about who I am, about the things that maybe got me to this place. I think it's easy for people to want to just say, you know, that it's bad luck or, you know, genetics or those sorts of things. But I, from the very beginning, have been a firm believer that in order for me to feel empowered, I need to take responsibility for the things that I can control, the things that I can do differently moving forward. And that's not to say I blame myself for where I am. But I do think we're whole people, you know, our bodies and our minds and our hearts and our souls are all connected. And so trauma, wounds, things that have happened in the past, I think, you know, our body stores those things. And I think that that has played a role, in my diagnosis and in my illness. And so continuing to ask God and to ask myself, like, what more is there for me to do? Not just, you know, eating the right things and taking the right supplements and showing up to the appointments, but, you know, what deeper level of healing am I being invited to? And, and doing that and pursuing that and leaning into that, because I think that's, you know, especially because our time, all of our time is limited on the earth. But not knowing how much longer you have, you know, really wanting to do that for myself and for my girls and for my marriage and for my friendships.
Yeah. I love that question. What am I being invited into? What deeper healing work is there for me? That is so good. And something that, again, as true to what you're saying, none of us knows how much time we have left on this earth, and we're all going through different things and everybody's dealing with their own hard right now. And that is a good question for all of us to sit with. So I love that. We'll end there. And I hope that hearing Christine's story, which thank you for being willing to show up and share it, especially when you're someone who is like, yeah, you now view life probably even more so as this like very precious thing. You only have so much time. It's like, you don't want to do just anything. So thanks for saying yes to bringing your story here. I think it's so impactful. And for all of us listening to it, to walk away reflecting on what are we being called to, what are we being invited into, is something that will serve all of us. So I hope that if you're listening, you'll take that question, ponder it, discuss it with a friend or a spouse or someone today. And we'll link Christine in our show notes so that if you want to follow along or learn from her, there's so much more to her than we even got into today. Like, she is so much more than just the woman who has cancer. So I should have probably said that from the beginning, but I mean that. And there's so much that she is up to that you need to know about. But I think this is great, a great way for you to get to know her the same way that I did. And you will just continually be surprised by all that she has to offer. So Christine, we love you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for making our table longer.
Thank you, Amanda.